The Ukrainian army is making verifiable progress in its counteroffensive in the south. That's according to independent analysts in the U.S. at the Institute for the Study of War. This counteroffensive focuses on the strategic southern city of Kherson. If they retake it and the surrounding towns, the conflict could turn. Kherson sits on the western banks of the Dnipro River. To talk about what's at stake here, we have Shashank Joshi on the line. He is defense editor at The Economist. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon, Scott.
Shashank, why is Kherson so important?
Well, Kherson's important because it was the first major administrative center, the first major city to fall to the Russians back in the very beginning of their invasion, or just within a week of the invasion, in fact. It's also a very important industrial region. So if you look around the Kherson province as a whole, this is an agricultural powerhouse, this region. It produces lots of the country's most important crops. And it's also geographically very significant. It's a kind of gateway to the western ports on the Black Sea that Russia does not control yet. For example, the port of Odessa being the most important of those. And it's in some ways the gateway in and out of Crimea, the Russian-occupied and Russian-annexed territory to the south. So all of those reasons are important. But I think the most important thing of all is that Ukraine has done very well to withstand the Russian advance, but it still is the case that Russia occupies around a fifth of the country, and Ukraine has to show at some stage that it is capable of taking back substantial amounts of territory. And Kherson is the first real test of that proposition.
And for Ukrainian military leaders, I gather this area and the city of Kherson is also symbolically important. 8 years to the day before this counteroffensive began, Russian forces in the process of taking Crimea killed more than 300 retreating Ukrainian soldiers. I mean, that's part of the recent memory here.
It is. I mean, it was called the Battle of Ilovaisk. It was a very important battle in 2014 between Ukraine and Russian-backed militia forces in Donbass, eastern Donbass province. And it was known as a massacre in Ukraine because when these forces tried to retreat from the city, they were killed, as you say, about 330 or more of them. So it is historically resonant, but that's to do with the date of the counteroffensive. That's not to do with the place. Kherson wasn't affected at all back in 2014. But of course, yes, as you say, the historical memory of that particular date, no doubt, will have been in the minds of the Ukrainian generals who planned the beginning of this offensive.
And as they try to retake Kherson, what is the strategy? We know Ukrainians have lesser firepower.
Well, I think the strategy is not a sort of D-Day type assault with huge mechanized forces flooding across the plains. The Ukrainians haven't got the manpower for that. They haven't got the equipment for that. What we're seeing is seems to be an attack by just a few brigades, pretty small formations. They're holding quite a lot back in reserve. They're committing some of their best artillery, some of their best armored vehicles, including French, German, American supplied guns, but they're not throwing all of their manpower at this. And I would say that the philosophy here is let's try and avoid storming the city if we can avoid it, because we know how destructive, how bloody urban warfare can be. And I would say the Ukrainian doctrine here seems to be advance a little bit, but advance in a way that you're penning the Russians in to a smaller space. Because don't forget, Kherson city is on the west bank of the Dnieper River. So you have quite a lot of Russian forces, perhaps 20,000 or so, all of them crammed into the space on the west bank of the river. Ukraine has destroyed most of the bridges, so they can't retreat very easily and they can't supply themselves very easily. So try and hem them in and then destroy them or force them to get away and move east rather than try and engage them in one big climactic battle.
So just thinking this through, if the Ukrainian troops indeed retake Kherson, what is the good case scenario for where this war goes from here from the Ukrainian perspective?
There's a lot more fighting to be done. If they retake Kherson, it would create a lot of problems for the Russians. They could lose a lot of troops. They would no longer be able to get to Odessa overland. It would be a psychological blow, and it would show the West that Ukraine can take back territory. So that would encourage more arms supplies from the Europeans, from the Americans and others. But at the end of the day, you would still have huge amounts of Russian forces on Ukrainian soil. You would still have Russians in the other parts of Kherson province, east of the Dnieper River. You'd still have them in Zaporizhia province next door. You'd have them in Donbass, where, of course, they've been advancing, albeit extremely slowly, in the last few weeks. So an offensive in Kherson would be, a successful offensive would be a symbolically enormous significance, but it would nonetheless leave a huge amount of Ukraine still to be fought over even after that point.
On the other hand, Shashank, if the Ukrainian troops don't succeed, they don't retake Kherson, what does that mean? Does it mean we have a continuation of this long and deadly slog of a war through the winter?
We're going to have a long and deadly slog through the winter, whether Ukraine wins this offensive or loses it or something in between. But if they fail, if they fizzle, and if they can't get closer to Kherson, or if they keep getting closer but they can't take the city even through the winter months, I think that's going to be a problem, because it's going to undercut Western support for Ukraine at a time when inflation is going up in the West, the cost of living is rising, energy prices are rising, and it may make it more difficult for Western governments to offer military and financial support to the Ukrainian government if there's a sense that this is futile, there's a sense that they can't take territory back. And I think it would also demoralize many Ukrainians, and it would be a setback for the Ukrainian armed forces. Now, I think people should not expect quick results. This is a war of attrition, and even when they're advancing to put themselves in a position to increase that attrition of the Russians, not necessarily to storm through the city in a matter of weeks or a month. So I think Ukraine has to manage expectations as to what it is actually going to be able to do on the ground, even through the autumn months.
They're also managing the news coverage of this. There is a blackout of sorts, or an attempted blackout. So we don't know a lot of the day-to-day specifics. Why is that? What would be the reason for holding back specifics to the news media?
Well, this is a long-standing feature of war. It's just we've become less used to it because of the nature of constant news and social media. But if you look at the Iraq war, if you look at reporters embedded with the U.S. Army, they weren't allowed to report the exact position of units or casualties taken or planes going out from a certain time. And this is a long-standing feature of any conflict. The Ukrainian army doesn't want the Russians to know precisely which roads they're moving down, which villages they're attacking, whether one unit is under strength and might be ripe to be counterattacked. These are very tactically significant details, and I can understand why the Ukrainians are withholding them. But nonetheless, this is war in the age of social media, and we are getting reports from, ironically, Russian sources, Russian military bloggers and military officials who are effectively giving away the location of where they are losing ground.
And briefly, if we can go 200 miles or so north and east of Kherson, that is where the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is, and we have heard a lot about that. There's fighting in and around this nuclear plant. Remind us what's at stake there.
Well, Zaporizhia is Europe's biggest nuclear power plant, and obviously everyone is worried about a nuclear accident of some kind, especially given that Ukraine has already had one in its history, the Chernobyl disaster of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. But I would emphasize that the biggest risk here is not something whacking into the main reactor of the plant. It's pretty well shielded and very well protected. The bigger concern, I think, is the electricity supply to the plant, because although it has diesel backup, there's only so long you can keep diesel generators running in a wartime situation. And of course, you have to keep not just the reactor running, but you have to keep the spent fuel, which is extremely hot. You have to keep that very cool, and you have to keep it stable, and you don't want that electricity supply to be disrupted. The fighting around the plant has intensified. The International Atomic Energy Agency, a UN agency, visited the plant last week to check on its condition. But I think there are real concerns, given that it's very near the front lines. And to a degree, it has become a political football, because the Russians have used it as a kind of shield for their military forces, knowing full well that Ukraine can't attack back without risking a disaster or risking a radiological accident on its own territory. So it's become a very, very sensitive site around which there's become a great deal of diplomatic and political as well as military confrontation.
Shashank, before we let you go, anything else you'd like to add?
I would just say that, you know, this is going to be a real test for lots of the things we haven't seen so far. Ukraine has done phenomenally well at defending for 6 months. It has defeated Russia around Kiev. It has blocked their advance on Kharkiv, on Odessa. It has pushed away the Black Sea fleet. It has killed tens of thousands of Russians. But for 8 years, Ukraine has been on the defensive. It just doesn't have that much experience of offensive activity. And I would say that we should not judge the Ukrainians just by their actions now. There are 10,000 Ukrainians being trained in the United Kingdom. Several thousand of them have already been trained. The EU is exploring its own training mission. I know that the US government is considering how it can expand training. The Ukrainians may only be in a really advanced position to conduct a proper offensive next year. And I think some people are anticipating that this could be over by Christmas, that this is, you know, approaching the end, this is exhaustion. And I would absolutely caution against that. Russia and Ukraine have fought each other for 8 years since 2014. And it would not surprise me if they're going to fight each other for many years hence. So this is not the end of the conflict. It's not even the beginning of the end. It's just a new phase.
Shashank Joshi is defense editor at The Economist. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, after we spoke to Joshi today, Ukraine's energy operator said that a fire from Russian shelling has effectively cut off the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant from the country's power grid.